Good morning, good afternoon, or good night. I'm your host, Adrian Conway. Welcome to another episode of Rising Pod. This is an athlete-to-athlete episode, or I guess we could say it's an athlete-to-coach episode or coach-to-coach episode, but we're joined by none other than the Michelle Latondra, the coach of Freya Moosburger, and a guy you may know, Pat Vellner. Now, we dive deep into Michelle's history within the sport, how she got started, what really started to create this baseline for her, not just as a competitor, but also leading into her coaching years. She shares a lot of wisdom. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here that I think a lot of people are going to enjoy to listen to. And if you're open, it's going to teach you a lot just about being a better version of you overall as a human. We all need to be teachable. We all need to be coachable. And yet, sometimes in order to do that, we got to hear things that we're not sometimes so excited about. Michelle shares some instances that came up for her and how it actually changed her forever because she chose to let it. So she's, of course, got some behind the scenes things to share, programming philosophies and where they originated and how she's been able to connect, not just with the two athletes that she's helping through the 2022 season personally, but also the other athletes across the world that reach out to her for programming, even from a remote perspective. I say this about all the episodes, but you guys are specifically going to enjoy this one as Michelle is the first coach that we've had on to get to pick her brain, learn from her experiences, as well as sharing some of the wisdom she's had, not just as a competitor on the floor, but also leading others to being some of the fittest people in the world. Enjoy this episode. Here's Michelle. All right, we are back for another episode of Athlete to Athlete, and today I get to sit down with a coach athlete, the legend herself, Michelle Latondra. Michelle, how are you doing?
I'm doing really, really good. How are you?
I am doing great. As we were catching up before we started recording, I think we're both in a pretty busy season of life and within the year. How are you managing having multiple athletes on your squad and overseeing program design for many other athletes around the country, and with all of them having their minds and worries and focuses and anxious feelings and all the sort, how are you dealing with all that right now?
Every year I do this, it's better and better. You know, it's kind of like when you're an athlete and you compete every year, you compete, you're still nervous. It's still kind of, there's always that overwhelming feeling, but you just know what it looks like, you know, before, during, and after. So, you know, this year doing really well. It's not too bad. I don't have that many athletes this year, so it's going pretty well. And lucky for me, my main athletes that I work with personally are both doing the same competition. So I lucked out on that one big time, because I've had years that, you know, like the athletes are separated in weeks by like three, and then it gets, programming design gets really complicated. So right now the only difficulty is that, you know, some of the athletes, like Pat has, you know, this to modify, Freya has this to modify, because we're managing fatigue and health before the competition. So, and when it comes to, you know, the general programming, the athletes that are following the general programming, I think that because of the nature of that, like, it's very easy to get overwhelmed and think that I have to get everyone ready for that. But a lot of responsibility lies on those athletes. And I have to take myself kind of, I have to check myself and remember that, you know, like, there's a reason why there's a personalized service and there's a general service, and both are good, but I can't control the general service as much as I can the personal. So getting better at managing that, because obviously I want to help everyone, and usually when people ask, I help, but I have to separate myself a little bit from that.
Absolutely, and I appreciate you bringing that up, because that's why it's a premium price to have the more involved relationship with you as a coach, and of course to have you overseeing everything from top to bottom, start to finish of a session or throughout a season. So I as a coach myself, I completely agree. And the downside is, of course, you personally want to do everything great, but not everything is within your control all the time. So it's healthy perspective that you have. But before we get too far into this season and currently where you're at, I want to take some of our audience back a bit to your origin story. You know, you are by definition a CrossFit OG and have been in the game for quite a while. So talk to us just a little bit about what got you started in CrossFit, where the passion came from, and what those first few years were like for you.
Oh man, I always like talking about this because every time I talk about this, I realize how lucky I was. I got into CrossFit because I went through a bad breakup in university. I played water polo at a high level, and when I was playing water polo in my high school years, so in Quebec, high school years is younger than in the U.S., but when I was playing when I was in high school, I was playing water polo at a really high level, and I kept applying and trying out for the junior national team, which is the youth Olympic team, and I always kept getting cut. I don't have the body type for a water polo. I'm short. I'm like 5'1". And I kept trying, and then at one point I had to decide, like, I was either going to keep trying something that I wasn't going my way, or I was going to just, you know, put that aside and focus on school. So once I got into CEGEP, which is kind of like before university here in Quebec, I just dropped sports and I studied design. I studied fine arts, so painting, sculpting, all that stuff. And then went into university in design. And then it was in my last year of university that I had this breakup and I started going back to the gym because, you know, I hadn't done that in like years. It was about time. And then I just started really getting involved in my training, just doing regular gym stuff. And when I was about to graduate, I figured it would be a good time to get a job before I got my real career. And I wanted to work in a gym because I wanted to see what it was like, and I didn't want to pay for a gym membership. And then I applied at a bunch of gyms, and the gym that called me back was a CrossFit gym, and they wanted a secretary. So I was like, yeah, I'll do that, you know? And I walked into the gym, and I was like, what on earth is going on here? I had no idea what CrossFit was. I had researched their website. I looked into who they were, but I just didn't understand the vocabulary.
Yep.
Well, when I walked in, I was just like, this is so weird. But then they gave me the job and they asked me to do CrossFit because I was the first person that people walked in and saw, and I had to be people, so I had to know what I was doing, what I was selling. So I tried it, and Adrian, the first workout, I was like, holy crap. This brought me back. I wasn't beat down, but I was just like, this is exactly the way I felt when I was training in water polo, when I went to practice and I felt like I actually did something. And I'm not a fitness person. I am a sport person. I love sport. I love practicing sports. I love the idea of, like, I love team sports, like individual sports. I really like all of that. But so working out was fun, but when I did CrossFit, I was like, this is just like practicing sport. And so I just dove in. Like many people, you had to stop me to go to the gym. I was going every single day. And then 1 month after I started, I was watching some people work out in the gym, which I knew they were like the advanced people. And I was watching this woman, Louise, who her and I are great friends now. I just came back from her house, actually. And then she was doing something that was particularly hard. And I had never seen a woman with physique like that up close. Like, I had watched the CrossFit games when I started doing CrossFit. But up close, I was like, wow, what's that? And just asked her what she was doing. And they told me they were getting ready for regionals back in 2010. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I looked into it. That's when I just was exposed to the sport. And then I did my first competition a month after. So it was a scale competition. I was doing banded pull-ups. And then it didn't take too long to progress. Lucky for me, I have I have a good amount of good genetics in my family. And then I just started competing, and I signed up at everything that I could, and team, individual, all that stuff. And then I qualified for my first games in 2011.
Wow. What a journey. You go from 2009, 2010, finding out about the sport, having that witness to someone in the gym, like, whoa, okay. Like, they're really doing something special there. I'm interested. Your first competition being scaled, you were doing banded pull-ups, you admitted to yourself. One, I think that's incredibly encouraging to some of our audience, meaning that, you know, they might find themselves in this position where they're like, you know, one day, man, I'd love to have Michelle as a coach, or I'd love to be competing at the semifinals, but I'll never be able to do it. I have to scale pull-ups, you know? And it's like, folks, we all have our own particular journey and starting points. It's really about getting the right guidance. And then of course, having the work ethic, no doubt that it takes to get there. But that's so cool that you segue so quickly into, hey, and then, I mean, my first games appearance in 2011, it's so few and far between that we hear of that type of advancement and that fast. When it comes to, and you alluded to the fact that it does take a particular genetic ability, right? Like your parents, hey, thanks parents. You blessed yeah. Michelle with the right kind of stuff, but it does take a particular mindset and psyche to like get yourself there. When you were playing water polo and doing all that stuff that you alluded to prior to CrossFit, do you think that that really helped you create the correct mindset and perspective to get to the elite level so quick?
Definitely the work ethic and the discipline came very naturally. And doing team sports, there's one experience that I had when I was playing that shifted my mindset quite a bit and forced me to be more patient and forgiving. When I was playing in my first portion of my water polo career, if you want to call it that, I was a really sore loser. I was a terrible teammate. Like I would tell people, "What are you doing?" I was mean to people because I wanted to win so much, and I was angry, and I didn't know how to express it. And one day, my coach sat me down at the end of the season, and this is not like an invitation to me. Like my parents paid for me to be there. And my coach was like, if you're going to come back with this kind of attitude, we don't want you back. So it was a very, very hard pill to swallow, because to me, it was like, well, I want to win. Like my anger is because I want to win. That's a good thing. But then I realized how important it was to be a good teammate, and how important it was for me as well to be more patient with people and myself. And then that kind of got me, and not to say that in my career as a CrossFit athlete, I wasn't too patient, because I think all the athletes out there know what that is. Like most of the time, you're not in a good place. It's frustrating. There's a lot of things you want to get good at. You want to be kind to yourself, but you just want to be so good so quickly, you know, it takes time. But that experience kind of led me to having a more kind but yet disciplined work ethic, and having a better understanding of the big picture of how to move forward in the sport, in any sport really. So the work ethic and the mindset that I was exposed to in water polo definitely set the tone. And obviously I have my parents to thank as well, because my father is an extremely disciplined person, very hard. And my mother as well, both of them showed real determination in their lives and grit. And just, you know, if you want something done, you have to do it and, you know, set a plan and do it. And so all of that mixed together, I think very, very fortunate to for me, because I got to have an athletic career like I always dreamed of in my later 20s.
Yeah, no, and I completely agree. I appreciate you sharing that story. I think that's, wow, there's a lot of maturation that happened. And one, I think that's really cool that coach was willing to share that with you. That's a hard conversation to have, right? Especially when you think, well, that coach at the time, you're looking back, you're like, man, he could have lost some money just from telling me he didn't want me to come back too. Like that was a tremendous opportunity for him to really put on that coach's hat and not be thinking like, oh, well, I'm just here to make some money. Like he made a complete difference in the way that you lead, the way that you follow, and eventually, of course, the way that you compete there, even as an athlete on the CrossFit Games floor. So I think that's really cool. And we all have probably instances like that we can reflect on where if we chose to hear the words, we could let them make a difference, right? Because there's a lot of us sometimes, and I deal with athletes like this. I don't know if you've ever had some combative athletes in your day as a coach, but sometimes athletes, you know, push away from that type of feedback because it's so hard to internalize and also admit right within yourself when you have those kind of faults and flaws. So I think that speaks a ton to your humility as well, just recognizing that's where you were and being able to pivot from that. That's awesome. And I'm sure it's helped you in droves as a coach with the athletes that you have right now a ton. But I want to continue on this games path for you. So you started in 2011. You made it to the CrossFit Games in regards to an individual career. What then happened in the years to follow? Where did your journey take you as a competitive exerciser on the CrossFit Games floor?
So, I mean, I qualified from 2011 to 2016. Every year I was a different version of myself. And I like to quote the movie Shrek. You know, we're onions, we have layers. Mm-hmm. And so I'm still, like, I develop layers every year. Every year had a theme. You know, there was 1 year I wasn't strong enough, there was 1 year I wasn't good enough runner. And all of these weaknesses as an athlete in every single year, I sought out help and ways to get better in those fields. And then following, in 2015, where I thought I was really the best version of myself. In 2015, I really felt like I could win the games. I was finishing off of 2014 where I placed fourth, and fourth was kind of a surprise to me. Before 2014, I didn't believe that I could be on the podium. And then in 2014, I was 6 points from the podium, and then I realized how close it is and that I am in fact part of that elite level. Yep. I'm not just a participant, but like a real threat, you know? And then in 2015, and you know this, I think you were at the games in 2015.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I was as an individual. Yep.
Yeah. So everybody got that heat stroke from Murr. And that year, I felt like the wind got sucked out of me. Like, you know, when you have a fall from very high, and just like, you stop breathing. That year, I kind of realized that I had a very tough and thorough talk with myself on what I wanted out of this career. You know, I remember telling my boyfriend in 2015, I was like, I trained so hard every day, but I felt that the Murph, like, it, I'm like, I don't want to train so hard every day to just get beat down. Like, I can compete and struggle, but that was a complete beat down, and I never got over that. And that's when I realized that being a CrossFit Games athlete for me wasn't my life. I loved it. I loved the sport, but to me, I just felt like it just wasn't for me. Being like, I applaud and look up to people like Matt Fraser and Tia. Those people are wonderfully inspiring. I'm just not that person, and I realized it that year. And then I said to myself I would stop, and then my boyfriend kind of convinced me to do one more year so that I can kind of just not leave on such a sour note. So 2016 was my last year, and I knew going into it that it was my last year. And then that led me to retiring, and then I went into coaching. I knew I was going to do coaching. I just didn't know what it was going to look like. And then I kind of prepared my retirement with competing in Olympic weightlifting for like a year or two.
Nice.
That was like for fun, but I didn't
stop
doing that. It was just a way for me to stay kind of competitive without doing CrossFit, and then I've been coaching since 2016.
That's great. That's, I mean, literally an amazing story. And I think, again, I appreciate your humility with just being so transparent with the way that you had that realization. I think 2015 physically. Goodness, I mean, if a lot of us were all pulled that have been to the games a couple times, it's like that might have been the hardest physical test, that especially when you really went in and looked at the Murph test and when it took place in the weekend and what was still left, you know, heavy DT, snatch sprint ladders, the pegboard, like so many things in my mind, the pig, like so many things. I was like, man, we did that. And we kind of kicked off the weekend with Murph after the messed up paddleboard that of course jacked my chin up and my chest, and my shoulders were all messed up after that. So I completely agree with you. And I actually had a similar story with a realization for me that year. I finished 21st at the games. I had come off of an injury the year before, and I thought I had slow played the year just right. I thought that I was about to knock it out of the park with my health and performance, and this was going to be the year that they aligned for me. And although at the games it was awesome, I had a couple great finishes in some events. I wasn't physically in the place that I wanted to be health-wise. And what it was telling me is that I don't know that I actually have the durability to be a top-notch athlete in this sport, because here I was pursuing it since 2011, and injury had kept me out of a couple regionals. And then here it was like, I felt almost, you know, governed by my ability to perform based on, man, my shoulder or man, my knee. And it was just something that continued to creep up on me. And so for me, I had a very honest conversation with myself as well. I was like, man, I don't know if I can be one of the fittest men in the world as an individual, but maybe I can still go put together a team and make a run at it. Luckily, that worked out. Yeah. And I've had my greatest success on teams, and that's always been, you know, you've mentioned team sports several times just in our 15 minutes chatting so far. And it's been something that I've loved so much, because of the other human dynamic and pulling each other along and everything. But yeah, I love that you had that realization and it pushed you into coaching. So you have this dream to work with athletes. This is going to prolong your existence within the sport. You create DECA Comp. Now, as an entrepreneur, what was that like? Is this a scary pursuit for you? Are you all in here? Do you work in a regular day job? How do you begin that journey?
I have to be honest. DECA Comp started because the owner of DECA Gym, the previous owner of DECA Gym, DECA CrossFit, just he believed in it more than I did.
That's so cool.
So I was like, man, no one's going to pay for this.
Yep.
And then I wanted to do it. I really loved the programming of it. One of the things that called me to it was creativity, right? Like, I had this duality my whole life. I was an artist for a while. And to me, like, for such a long time, being an artist and being an athlete just didn't mix. It just didn't mix. It was like I was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And then,
yes,
you know, every part of my years, I was this skinny little hipster, you know, designing like prototypes or whatever. And then this other part, I'm like this muscular jock that like people look at down the street, you know what I mean? Like, it just didn't mesh together. And what I really loved about the idea of becoming a coach is that it is really a form of design. You're designing a program and you have to basically solve a puzzle. And every athlete is like a different puzzle. And I just love that aspect of it. That's why I love designs. Like, you look at a problem and you're trying to think of all the functional solutions that can come of it. And being in CrossFit, another thing that I love is that there are so many different things. There are so many different ways of training. And I just wanted to learn about it. And that's what I love about being a CrossFit athlete too, right? When you're a CrossFit professional, CrossFit athlete, you get exposed to like, oh shoot, my weakness is, you know, running. And then I started seeing a running plyometrics coach, and then I realized, well, it's not my running my problem, it's my plyometrics. And then you get exposed to this new world of athleticism that is just constant discovery. So being a coach to me was just constant discovery. And I have to admit, like, I started off with the bang, kind of. Like, it's really silly. I asked Patrick Vellmer, right? Like, we trained together. Patrick and I trained together in 2016 for my last year and his first year. And then I somehow decided I had the guts to ask him to coach him. The guy that just got a podium finish in his first year. And I'm like, well, Pat, you want to coach? And then he said,
yes.
And then it forced me, it really truly forced me to be on the, like, on. I stepped up my game, even though I had no experience. And the fact that he trusted me really is, I have Pat to thank for my, my journey as a coach, because Pat has made me become a professional very quick. I had no choice. So I just love working with Pat. I'm very honest with Pat. Like, I tried a lot of things on Pat. Some things worked, some things didn't. And we've always had very open channel communication. So he's a big part of what DECA Comp has become, because I was forced to learn new things and do things. So it is what it is today because of Maxim, who believed in me. He's like, we have to launch this. You just do the programming. I'll take care of the rest. And then eventually I had to take care of a lot of the business. I got in a business partner at one point when I realized I couldn't do it alone. So my business partner, Fred, has helped me out a lot because I can focus on my coaching and programming, make the company and stuff like that. So, you know, a lot of the success that DECA Comp has right now is really thanks to the people that are around me. So it's just, and that's what it is in business. I'm majoring, you know this, like, you have an idea, and it's like you as a coach, you as a business owner, you as an athlete, you have an idea, and you need people to help you lay the stones to go there. So thank you all, and shout out to everyone.
Absolutely. And again, teamwork makes the dream work. And yeah, you're preaching to the choir here. Like I completely understand where you're coming from there. It's easy to have an idea. It's hard to follow through, and it's hard to not just follow through the first time necessarily, because we all get fired up and feel like we can conquer the world, but to do so consistently in order to really build a resiliency for a particular business, that is really hard. And that's really where other people come into play. Now, I know you talk a lot about your creativity, and of course, these abstract things within your life that you actually get to be fulfilled by with coaching. I equally had a realization when I started coaching and doing program design years ago, when I was with Brute Strength back in the day, was that, you know, I have a creative outlet that needs to be filled from coaching, and I didn't even know that existed within me. I didn't know that's what that was. So I love it so much. It's like, if I wasn't a coach the way I was, I think I would need to be a writer of some sort. And none of these things would have ever surfaced for me as an athlete, because you don't really get that opportunity. Like you mentioned, it's two different sides of your brain, you know, functioning at once. So I completely relate there. When you talk about your coaching style, is there like a philosophy or anyone that you have learned from, where you really pull from specifically, or anything like that?
That's a great question. So my coaching style is definitely a mix of the things that I wanted to have as an athlete and the things that I believe people need, athletes need. When we talk about programming, at the beginning of my career as a programmer, I mean, I was heavily influenced by what I've done and what my kind of balance is. What I've done that worked, what I've done that I liked, and what I've done that challenged me and made me better. So a lot of the programming design at the beginning of my career was really influenced by my previous coaches. Mm-hmm. And my coaching style was influenced by my previous coaches, but more about what I didn't like. Yep. Right? Like when people, and I've had all kinds of coaches, and unfortunately they were all male. And some coaches, like my coach that sat me down when I played water polo, is to this day one of the most important people that shaped who I am today. I don't even think he knows it. I tried to reach out to him recently and I can't find him, but he was an important part of what I realized was important, you know? And then I have other coaches that I realized, like, man, this person is insensitive and doesn't realize that I'm a very sensitive person. And a lot of people see me as someone who's not particularly sensitive. I can look like a hard ass sometimes, but it is precisely because I am so sensitive that I have that kind of attitude. And sure. I wish people had seen that. So when I talk to my athletes and my coaching style with them, like person to person, is really just, I try as much to match what the person needs or what I think they need, right? But when it comes to programming more recently, I've been heavily influenced by endurance. So I've started doing endurance triathlons now. Like I've done my first half Ironman last year. I'm doing another one. So I've really dove into the world of endurance.
Yeah.
And lately, my programming style has been very heavily influenced by that. And so there's no particular coach, but I do follow a triathlon program. And I to see how they work versus how, you know, I used to follow Ben Bergeron's program, how he works. I had another coach on how he worked, and all of these things mixed together align with, I'm also very influenced by the conjugate method. So all of these things together, just kind of, I have my own little recipe and it seems to be working. So that's part of the creativity, Adrian, right? You take ideas and you link them together. And that's the fun part of our job, because, and if you have athletes that are willing to try things with you,
yep,
you can really find out some really cool things.
Absolutely. We are truly one big walking science experiment all the time, right? Like we're literally, now we're doing our very best to make sure we hit things accurately. It's not like we're just throwing things at the wall, but truly it's like our previous lessons as athletes, our previous lessons from coaches, the way we interact with one another or with our athletes. Like I completely agree. And I always told myself that's what I wanted to do was be the best of all the worlds I've ever experienced for someone, right? So it's reading their particular personality and then, hey, did they need to be motivated externally? Like, do I need to get after them to put in the work, right? Or is it more so I need to challenge them in a different way? I need to ask them more questions. I need to let them guide themselves to the conclusion. Because if I make the choice for them, they won't have the same kind of conviction about making that choice, right? But if they can do it themselves, then they're going to be fired up about it and really have a passion for that choice. So I love that. I appreciate it. Now, I know that you work with a relatively large group of folks that follow general programming, right? Throughout the year, you program, I'm assuming, to really structure around the CrossFit season, of course. But with these athletes that you have, that you're a little bit more intimate with, and I'm thinking Pat and Frey off the top of my head, how do you balance, one, not just the difference in personality, but truly the difference in where they're at career-wise? And it's not that they train together all the time, but even when they are together then for a week or two at a time, how do you balance all that diversity there?
One of the things that I've learned, especially in the last few years, is that the less you force things, the easier and better and more natural it is. You know, Pat's an adult, Freya's an adult. You know, they jive together, and usually when they're two, it's pretty easy because, you know, Pat is actually really fun because, honestly, I can take anyone to Pat, and Pat will be good, you know. Like, he will take care of them and talk to them, and he loves to talk, so he loves to guide people. And so when I had Pat, like, this not too long ago, we were all together, and Pat really took, like, under his wing and talked to her about the different points of view that she should have as an athlete. Sometimes I have to remind him that he's talking to like a 20-year-old female athlete, and like, you know, at the quarterfinals he had mentioned just like that, like, you have to go unbroken. We were talking about muscle ups, it was 10 reps, and I'm like, whoa.
yep.
Hold on a second. You know, sometimes I have to remind him, but really, a big part of being a coach is, like for me anyways, is not trying to control the balance of what these athletes, you know, they have to figure that out for themselves. And I'm very lucky because the athletes that I've worked with for the most part have been really good people. And we do things a lot remotely as well. So that helps a lot because when we are together, it's really business. You know, it's like we're working, we're training, people are asking questions, you know, it's very hands-on. And I try as much as I possibly can to have a 9-to-5 approach as well, so that I myself won't get overwhelmed by too many things. I'm an introvert, so when there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things going on, a lot of energy, a lot of positive or negative energy, like I need some time for myself. So managing it is always like on a good thing, but like a lot of the times you get overwhelmed if you try to do too much or if you get too involved in other people's relationships. But Pat's great. Freya's great. Freya is so fun to be around. She's easy with everybody. She gets along with everybody. So it's fantastic. The first time I met her, I was like, yeah, I want to work with Freya. You
know? That's so cool. And I know it takes intentionality from you to help them balance things, even though I know you prefer the hands-off choice, but it's certainly something where your presence and attitude dictates how well the athletes will mesh together when it's all said and done, because they're always still going to be looking to you as the leader, right? So I think that's awesome. Freya did have something to share in regards to like coming on with you as a coach. And she was like, you know, I thought that, you know, becoming like an elite CrossFitter at first was just going to be filled with conditioning and Metcons all day. And then the first time I got to train with Michelle, it was very different. And we talked about how it was focused on the intricacies that a lot of people overlook often, right? Developing a mastery of the kipping swing on the rings and simple setups for lifts and the details. Can you talk a little bit about it, particularly to our audience, that like, why is that the case? Why are those things that you focus on so much as a coach?
Well, CrossFit is a sport, right? It's a sport. And we are probably the only sport that a lot of athletes who practice the sport don't actually practice the sport. And so we're at a point now where it's getting harder and harder to qualify. It's also getting harder and harder to have longevity in our careers. So to me, it's super, super important that athletes take the time to treat training like it is a sport. You know, there are times for practicing in our sport, it takes on a different look, but yes, I program a ton of accessories. So unless they're specifically training for a competition, which to me is about 3 months out of the competition, maybe one Metcon a day, and then possibly a Metcon and then a conditioning piece, which is all aerobic, high volume, low intensity kind of stuff. And the rest of the training day, which can go up to 5 hours, like 4 or 5 hours in a day, split into two or whatever, the rest of that is controlled accessories. And I got that from Conjugate. Like, that's something that I wish I would have done when I was competing. Like, not to say I did a lot of accessories when I was competing, but not as much as I did my athletes. And they're learning from my mistakes. You know, I finished my career with a back problem, a knee problem, a foot problem, a shoulder problem. Nothing completely debilitating, but training through it, stuff like that. It is a given. If you're going to be a professional in this sport, then you have to treat it like a professional. And Metcons is the fun part. Everybody can do a Metcon. Everybody loves
it. That's right.
People think that, like the real hard work is waking up and going to the gym and doing two technical pieces before lifting. And then doing an accessory to that lifting and to that. You know what I mean? Like, all of these pieces that just take time, and that's what that's reality is. And it's boring and it sucks. Like, if I was an athlete doing my programming, I would be like, oh, you know, I try to keep it fun. Like, I feel like my Metcons are fun and my training provides good feedback, but like, yeah, that's what it is.
I appreciate your honesty, girl. And I think the people need to hear it, you know, and that's why I wanted you to share a little bit about it. I lean in the same direction, you know, we're peas in the pod in regards to making sure our athletes don't have to experience the same issues from a negative experience that we did as athletes, and making sure that, you know, what you feel like you missed, you can provide for them, whether it's a list of accessories or really thinking about different methods that we can apply, like aerobic capacity work in different forms. And I, you know, it sounds like we have a lot of the same philosophies. It's a lot of the same way that I apply with my athletes in True Fitness. We're talking a lot about athletes. We're talking a lot about programming, and I can't help but be curious about your perspective on, and this is important because it's changed so much throughout your career as an athlete and into now, what do you think currently about the qualification process that exists for 2022 to the CrossFit Games?
You know the saying, history repeats itself, right? We're in a point right now where I can see us going back to what we used to have, open regional games. But you know, I don't know what to think about it, because CrossFit is a catch-all, like, prepared for the unknown and unknowable. And I feel like you forgot about that. And that's important too, because as an OG, like Adrian, you know, we have to stop clinging on to what we used to know. Like, the bad thing about being a coach that was an athlete in the past is nostalgia. And so 100%. The nostalgic part of the CrossFit, like, competitive process in the past, to me, was better. What I wish we had was more on-site competition for the classes. What the format allows is pretty much just one qualification competition, because competing every year doesn't allow for maybe like multiple in-person competitions, not in the format that is like sectional. Like, if we, you know, I don't have a solution for the problem. I don't know what the actual problem is. You know, the Open is a beautiful and inclusive part of the season that I have appreciated a lot more now as a non-competitive athlete. I've done the Open every year, even though I haven't registered every year. I've done it every year and I really appreciate it. And I do believe that if the open has to be done by all the athletes, there needs to be something else. Like the quarterfinals, to me, there's something wrong about it. Like, I like the idea of the quarterfinals, but there's something kind of off about it. The online competition just invites too many controversy, too much controversy. And the reality is that in my mind, my athletes, they perform very well. We've never had any major penalty issues. Like, you know, my athletes compete well. And when I'm there, they do it well. But there's something about that format that just, it's like, probably everyone is doing it to their best of their abilities, and I don't think anyone's cheating, but the format is just like, well, I like to think that no one's cheating.
No, I appreciate you having a good mindset towards it. I wish I could think that about them as well, but sometimes, hey, I can't think that. But continue on, because I think you're hitting the nail on the head in my perspective as well.
I just wish I had an answer to that question, Adrian, but the reality is that the format is what it is. I do think that it needs to be a little bit more professionalized, and I do believe that the new CrossFit Games team is going in that direction. I don't know if the sport right now is at a financial situation that it can afford a solution that is more on site, that is more controlled or whatnot. The way it stands right now, there's a lot of controversy. And the way I see it personally is that, well, the controversy isn't touching my athletes completely directly, so I'm trying not to worry about it, because there's so little I know about it that having a full-on opinion wouldn't make sense. Because what's the other option? Like, I have no idea. I like the workouts this year. I really did like the workouts. I like the open workouts. I like the quarterfinal workouts. I like the Masters semifinal workouts. Like, I like Adrian's style so far. I think it's nice. You know, I think it brings back a little bit of classic things that we used to see. Adrian has a circus background, I think. So
yes. Yep.
It does show in his choices of workouts, which I think is nice, because I was starting to see the athletes becoming more and more a certain style, like bigger, you know, stronger, a little bit less skilled.
Yep.
So having a little bit more skill in there is always really nice. But, you know, I wish I had the answer to that question. There are some issues that need to be addressed, and hopefully they will be. And I would love to hear about the solutions and be part of that conversation, because I would love to learn more about it.
I agree, you know, and I'm excited to be hopefully a part of that too. I think that they are trying their best. You know, of course, with CrossFit changing hands and there being a lot of people that are now tied into the game staff and also CrossFit HQ staff that we're just still becoming familiar with who we are and what we are. I think they're probably handling it as best they can, right? And as they continue to pull people up from within, I think that can help guide these decisions, which it seems as though they're in the process of doing. I noticed there's a few employment opportunities for people that are directly, you know, like responsible for communicating with athletes all year and like events all year. And so it seems like this stuff is in the works, which is good. And I agree, the quarterfinals, especially this year, was like super shady with all kinds of craziness, right? Like it almost broke my heart to see the skepticism that existed and how people were so upset about it.
It's really hard to see what happened with the shuttles. I mean, like, honestly, in my opinion, that's the athlete's fault. Like,
sure.
Athletes that didn't read the rules, like, what? Like, how is that a thing? Like, how could you not read the rules? And, like, the first thing I was like, okay, is this traditional shuttle run out back, or do they have a different description of a shuttle? Like, that was terrible. And then the way they didn't fix it was terrible. And it hurts so much to see that because, you know, you're a business owner. You know what it means when you make changes in a business, and big, big, big changes require, like, the trickle-down effect of a small decision is huge. So what CrossFit is doing right now with a bigger picture that is very, I can see it as being very broad, you know, those big decisions, imagine the trickle-down effect on that. And unfortunately, Adrian is kind of like the punching bag of those.
Yep, he is.
it's a tough situation to be in, because the reality is that everybody is right. Like, everyone has a very valid point, and we just all need to be patient. But why people aren't patient is because some athletes are missing out. Some athletes are being paid for this. Some athletes aren't, you know? So it's like, it's so complex.
It is. It is extremely complex, and there are a lot of moving pieces. I will say, we of course know every semifinal is doing two events straight across this year, right? So that's a cool ode to creating some uniformity. I like the test personally. I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on those two and what you've seen so far, even from different semifinals that have already kicked off.
I like the tests that CrossFit wrote, like the 2014. Rope climb event is just, I mean, how, excuse my language, I won't say it, but how crazy is it to see those times? Like, it's crazy. Absolutely. I think the female best time is like 3:28.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And the best time of a male is 2:44. Like, mm-hmm. What? It's a minute faster, right? Like a minute faster? It's ridiculous. It's absurd. And then I remember I heard someone, I don't know who, saying that we should have put weight vests to see the progression. I'm like, come on. Like, if you want to see progression, just watch the female field. And to have more women around the 4:30 mark is just completely crazy. And like, so this is where, like, sometimes I wish people would stop adding weight to things, because
yes.
So 2014, we got that rope climb event, and it was the year after 2013 at the Games, where barely any females finished that rope climb event, worked out with the thrusters and the rope climbs.
Right.
And then in 1 year, we saw like most women in the last two heats, you know, finish the event. And then how many years is it? It's like 8 years later? 8 years?
Yeah, something like that. Yep.
And we're looking at first heat females having like it's just crazy how much it's progressed. And we're talking about a movement that doesn't have that, like, it's not like a, I don't know. I was amazed. I like the complex. I like the clean complex a lot. I like that they put a jerk in there. It's nice to see an overhead, because that's in weightlifting, it's one of those skills that, like, you can be a really strong cleaner and squatter, mm-hmm. but or jerkers. I think it's a good mix. I was talking with Pat about this. We both wish that that CrossFit had written out a longer event, because some of the semis have a very bias towards shorter.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that's a lot of the American, North American regions. There's a lot of mm-hmm. short, heavy object events that we're seeing, which is fine, but it makes up like most of the workouts, you know, as a smaller athlete, I'm like, well, that's why smaller athletes kind of died out in CrossFit, you know? So, but they're fun to watch. It's nice to see different programming. It gives me ideas. Like, it's nice. Like, it's fun events.
Yeah, I agree. I think I couldn't, you know, argue your point there, particularly with the shorter events. It seems as though a lot of them have leaned that way. I was a big fan of the complex and a big fan of the rope climb workout. It seems as though it would be most appropriate when CrossFit drops, you know, in the future, if they want to make it uniform, it's like almost maybe drop three and make one for each energy system, you know, release a longer workout, release a traditional, you know, couplet or triplet, and then release a lift, and then let the other three events then let them cover their bases. 'Cause they can kind of get crazy at that point. At least we know the event overall will be, you know, pretty much well-rounded. So
in the African region, they have a swimming event. Like,
yes.
You know, I thought CrossFit would say like no swimming, because it can't be uniformly, you know, done. And that
right.
is what I think history repeats itself, because back in 2010, when all the regionals had their own programming, you had girls that couldn't do muscle ups at the game, not with the opening event. So it's like, I think we're going back to a direction where CrossFit at one point is going to say, well, come on, we're going to have athletes that, you know, from all over the place. So it just, to me, it makes more sense to have CrossFit program those events. It just makes more sense that way. But at the same time, it's nice to see people's flares, and that's when Greg Glassman announced that it was all the semis that were going to take care of the workouts and everything. We saw some really cool, very different formatting style that probably influenced CrossFit as well. So it's good to have variety, but when we're talking about professional sports, we need consistency. So what's, I agree with you, Adrian, that's a good idea to have three. Three would balance it out, because six events, you know, to me that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens in the future, but we know in 2 weeks, your athletes are going to take the floor at the Atlas Games. You'll be there in Montreal. I'll be there in Montreal. I will be a rookie on the microphone commentating.
Have you ever been?
Never. This will be my first time really into Canada at all. So I couldn't be more excited. What should I be doing? What should I be looking out for? Is there any food I need to try to find?
Okay. My gosh, we'd have to have another hour doing is going out to eat, and Montreal is probably one of the best cities in North America. I've been to a lot of places, and we have really good food. But you're lucky because the week after is F1, so the city comes alive.
Wow.
Well, so if you have time, I can give you some addresses, but it's going to be muggy, probably warm, but I'm very excited for Athens. I mean, it's like 4Ks away from my house, so I'm so happy to have a competition this close, because we always have to travel everywhere.
And I will get those addresses from you for sure. I'd love to kind of make my rounds if we have time, because I know our days are very long. I think I'm there almost every day from like 12 to 9, but they don't start till 12. So maybe some breakfast or lunch spots. But what, if you had to predict, what do you think the turnout will be like? And I ask that because if you watch the MAC currently taking place, or if you go back and watch the other American event last week in the Syndicate, goodness, it was very empty, and it left me very disappointed. Like, there's not a lot of butts in the seats. And I don't know if it's because they were both in Tennessee and people kind of took them for granted, so they just didn't go. But we've had the fittest people in the world take the stage already. And I'm assuming in Montreal, they're going to be excited because it hasn't happened in quite a while.
You know, we like, so in Montreal, COVID is like, we only took off the mask mandate like on the 14th of May, which was like, it's like, a little bit more than a week ago. So we're still living the post buzz where everyone is super excited to see people, and like our social lives is kind of finally coming together and stuff like that. So I really hope the turnout will be good. I mean, we never get that scale of competition, and the male side of the competition is so exciting.
So exciting.
It is in a location that is very city central. So for anyone who is, I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but if anyone is debating, like, you should totally come, because the city of Montreal in this time of year is fantastic. There's lots of things to do, and you won't be in the suburbs. Like, Airbnbs will be in the city. You'll be able to walk around, do some city checking out stuff. So I'm really hoping there's going to be a lot of people. My guess is there will be. Like, Atlas was kind of the competition where COVID happened. Like, the athletes were sitting down in 2019 waiting
to
meet, and they were told that they couldn't.
Wow, I remember now. Yes.
Yeah. So hopefully people will be, you know, coming in hot and really checking it out. And I just, you know, fingers crossed. I for sure, if I was a spectator, if I didn't have any athletes, I would be going for sure.
I love it. Well, yeah, we'll definitely release this within the next couple of days. And I want to encourage everybody that's listening, if you are in the area, to make the trip to Montreal, or you're in Montreal itself, come on out. It's going to be a great show. We have got a stacked, you know, field on both sides with that male side. Boy, that's going to be something impressive. It's going to be down to the wire. And there's going to be some guys that miss out on the CrossFit Games this year, because it's going to be that type of throwdown. But Michelle, I want to thank you so much just for hopping on the mic and joining me today. I know you got a lot going on, and it's a busy season. Best of luck to the whole DECA Comp crew, and you keeping your sanity throughout the season with the athletes that you're going to be helping get to where they want to go in regards to their goals. And best of luck. I will see you in Montreal. Hopefully I'll be in the back a little bit asking questions to try to put on a good show for everyone. So we'll see each other in just a couple weeks.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Adrian.
Absolutely. Guys, thanks for joining us on another episode of Athlete to Athlete. That was Michelle LaTondra.